This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later on today's show, a look at Cincinnati's urban Appalachian community. But first, head and neck cancer has commonly been linked with risky behaviors like smoking and drinking. But research now points to a new cause as well, the human papillomavirus, or HPV. And joining us to talk about this newly discovered connection and how to prevent head and neck cancer, our assistant professor in the Division of Hematology Oncology at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine, Dr. Tricia Wise-Draper, and assistant professor of otolaryngology at UC College of Medicine, Dr. Rebecca Howe. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Rebecca and Tricia, thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Mark. Happy to be here.
Tricia, start off by telling us what exactly is head and neck cancer? Because this takes a lot of different forms. There are a lot of different types of this, aren't there?
Yes, it's a very good question, and I get asked this a lot by a lot of patients on what actually defines head and neck cancer. So head and neck cancer, the type that we most commonly deal with is squamous cell carcinoma of the head and neck. It's a certain subtype of head and neck cancers. But when we say head and neck cancer, it actually can arise from many different sites. So it can arise in your oropharynx, which is your tonsil and base of tongue, as well as a soft palate. So pretty much the back of your throat, what you can see when you look in the mirror and you look at the back of your throat. It can also arise in the oral cavity, which is more, the easiest way to think about it is in front of that area. So your tongue, your cheeks, your lips, that kind of area. And then there's also anything below that area is going to be in the laryngeal area, and that's actually Dr. Howe's specialty, is going a little deeper into the throat. But then there's also areas that go above that area, which is the sinus cavities. So you have a bunch of sinuses or holes in your face where you can develop squamous cell carcinomas. You also have salivary glands, which are included there. Now, those are usually not squamous cell. They're usually different types of cancer, but they're still considered head and neck cancer. You can also get cancer in your nasal cavity, so in your nose, and that would also be squamous cell carcinoma. And then a little bit behind your nose, so what's called your nasopharyngeal area, you can also get cancer there. Those, although most of them are squamous cell type, are a little different than the rest of the head and neck cancers, and we actually treat them differently. They arise a little differently, and different symptoms cause those. So head and neck cancer in general comprises a lot of different types of cancer, which, why, in my opinion, is important to have a very specialized medical radiation oncologist and surgeon to make sure that they know what they're dealing with.
But it sounds like primarily can be in your sinuses, it can be in your mouth, it can be in your throat. So
correct.
Pretty much any of the cavities in your head or your neck.
Mm-hmm. Is that pretty much, yeah. So pretty much from your lungs up, so starting from there all the way up to your eyes, that's pretty much what you want to think about when you think about head and neck.
Rebecca, how common is head and neck cancer?
So head and neck cancers, it really depends on, I would say, the group of patients that you actually come into contact with and what they're presenting with. So I'll tell you that in my practice, I'm a fellowship trained laryngologist, and so I see a lot of patients that come in with sore throats, with also hoarseness, dysphonia, and this kind of goes into what Dr. Wise-Draper is seeing. The clinical incidence of it, I think, really kind of depends on the site and the location. And so even though we kind of broadly group it into a head and neck cancer, there's all these different subsites, which is exactly what we're talking about today. Some of them are more there's a greater predilection for the HPV virus types of cancers. So one of the other ones that I treat is so there's malignant, and then we also talk about benign tumors. So not all tumors are ones that you necessarily have to undergo radiation or oncology. Or medical oncology or have chemotherapy. But sometimes surgery in and of itself, which is in more of the benign cancers. So there's a benign type of cancer which is called respiratory papilloma or laryngeal papillomatosis. It comes in a couple different types. But this is also the predilection for that is also a different types of HPV subtypes, which we'll talk about. So for an exact number, Tricia, I don't know if you have a better number. I don't have a number to give.
There's about 600,000 new cases worldwide of squamous cell carcinomas. And so that's going to encompass all the different sites. But I don't know the incidence exactly of the benign tumors.
600,000 sounds like quite a few. How does that compare to other forms of cancer?
It's the sixth most common cancer worldwide. And as Dr. Howe has already pointed out, when you really start to break it up into the different subsites, the incidence changes quite a bit. In fact, the oropharyngeal cancers, which are the ones that are going to be most directly related to human papillomavirus or the high-risk human papillomavirus, those are on the rise. And that's why it's so critical to talk about this at this time.
Are some of these head and neck cancers detected by dentists?
Absolutely. Oral cavity cancers are the ones that are going to be most commonly caught by a dentist, and it's very important for patients to see their dentist regularly. That's where most of our referrals come from, and those go to the surgeon. So Dr. Howe can probably comment on that a little farther.
Mm-hmm. Rebecca?
So again, based off of the different locations, as Tricia talked about, it really depends on the treatment varies. So oral cancers are very classically talked about as a surgical treatment. And so surgical treatment is optimal for oral cancers. And that's been pretty well defined. So HPV has been shown in oral specimens, but it's less of the ones that we're necessarily talking about today, which are much more common in sort of what we call the Waldeyer's ring, these are the areas where you have more lymphoid tissue. And so tonsillar cancers or oral pharyngeal cancers are the ones that are certainly on the rise, which is just exactly what Tricia had talked about. And those ones are the ones that are a little bit tougher to treat in the sense that it's not just a surgical treatment at all.
So what are the survival rates for head and neck cancer compared to other types of cancer?
So that gets even more difficult to answer because it really depends on the site. So I'm going to talk specifically about oropharyngeal because it's probably where we have some of the best statistics. So in the oropharyngeal setting, HPV-positive tumors have a better prognosis, so they do better. And it doesn't matter what type of modality of treatment you give them. So whether it be surgery, radiation, chemotherapy, in general, they do better compared to the HPV-negative tumors. So if you have an HPV-positive tumor and you're a non-smoker, and non-smoker is actually defined as less than 10 pack years, and what that means is that you've smoked less than one pack per day for less than 10 years, that's the general way to put it, is that those patients have greater than a 90% chance of cure, no matter the modality. If they're HPV-positive smokers, that drops about 10%. If they're HPV-negative non-smokers, then they drop another 10%, so you're hitting somewhere between the 60 and 70%. But the worst group are the HPV-negative smokers, and they drop somewhere between the 40 and 50%. And so, again, this is why this has become so important. Now that we understand a little bit more about HPV, we understand a little bit more on what patient survival rates are, what we can do to treat them. Should we treat them differently? That is very controversial in the field.
Well, the research is now showing this connection with the human papillomavirus. And how strong is this connection?
So it's getting stronger. So as I mentioned, the oropharyngeal cancers are on the rise, and it's been linked to HPV. So although smoking-related cancers are actually on the decline, so lung cancers, oral cavity tumors are more prone to happen with smoking, those are all on the decline, but the HPV-positive tumors in the oropharynx are on the rise. And so we now know that it depends on which statistic you look at and which region you're in on how often or how common smoking is. It determines on how high the proportion are. But when you go to the oropharyngeal cancers only, about 50 to 70% are now HPV positive, and it's predicted for that to continue to increase over 90% by 2025.
And I think the CDC says that HPV is responsible for 72%. Is that correct?
That's oropharyngeal specific.
Okay.
So if you do all head and neck cancers combined, then it drops to about 20 to 30% because oropharyngeal cancers only make up a proportion of the head and neck cancers.
Now, isn't HPV the same virus that's linked to cervical cancer?
That is correct. So cervical cancer has been linked to many high-risk types of HPV. So even though we're talking about one virus, there's actually several serotypes. So there's HPV 16 and 18, which are the most common high-risk. Those are the ones that are targeted by the vaccine. Those are the most common also in cervical cancer. But whereas cervical cancer, over 90%, closer to 99% of cervical cancer is linked to HPV, head and neck is not quite that linked. And on top of that, HPV 16 specifically is the one that's most linked to head and neck cancer.
Okay, so many different forms of HPV. It's not just one virus, and that's important to, keep
strains
in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. There's actually more, almost 200 different types and even 170 that can actually affect humans. So again, there's a huge variation in just HPV, but exactly as Trisha is talking about, there are certain specific subtypes that are more common in HPV-related tumors. And again, sort of thinking about the other ones that I see more commonly in my practice are the benign types, the benign papillomas, and those are more commonly the 6 and 11 serotypes, so which are also, they're in the quadrivalent vaccine as 6, 11, in addition to the 16 and 18.
Rebecca, any idea how long we've known about this possible connection? How long have we suspected there might be a connection between HPV and head and neck cancer? It didn't seem to be part of the whole HPV vaccine discussion a few years ago.
You know, actually, I think Trisha was actually a part of that. That was discovered out in Ohio State. So she could probably answer that.
So I wasn't directly involved, but Dr. Maura Gilson, who I feel is one of my closest mentors, was the one who's credited with the association of HPV and head and neck cancer. And that happened about a decade ago when the World Health Organization accepted that HPV was actually linked to head and neck cancer.
Okay. We will continue our conversation about HPV's connection with head and neck cancer, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and joining us to talk about the newly discovered connection between head and neck cancer and the human papillomavirus and how to prevent head and neck cancer, assistant professor in the Division of Hematology Oncology at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine, Dr. Trisha Wise-Draper, and assistant professor of otolaryngology at Yale. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Trisha, how is HPV transmitted? How does somebody get this in the first place?
So most HPV is known to be transmitted sexually, but it has now been linked to be able to be passed by oral sex, possibly by kissing. There has been a lot, possibly through the birth canal as well, though those are hypothetical and haven't all been confirmed. Dr. Howe can talk about the low risk because that is a little bit more accepted, being transmitted through the birth canal. But the high risk specifically, they found that by taking oral rinses, and again, this is a lot of Dr. Gillison's work, that it's actually quite frequently found in oral rinses from patients. So they take some mouthwash, rinse their mouth, and then do a DNA test on it, and they can find HPV in a lot of people who do not have head and neck cancer.
Rebecca, what about the low risk part?
So again, the low risk has been talked about. So in what we call laryngeal papilloma or recurrent respiratory papillomatosis, there's sort of two, it's a bimodal disease. And so it's seen in children as a juvenile, what we call a juvenile onset. And then there's an adult form, which is an adult onset. So again, it's a tumor, but it's a benign tumor. It's very specific to the head and neck area. And then it's also, it's a distinct clinical entity, and but it is related to, again, the other serotypes, the 6 and 11 types of HPV. So the vertical transmission, which is through the birth canal, which is, again, thinking about what we know about cervical cancers and HPV, is what was initially looked at for children that had, again, the juvenile onset form of the RRP or the respiratory papillomatosis. The adult form, however, there's been a lot more discussion about it as we've been talking about during this interview. But again, what we know is that there are, when you look at big groups of patients and you do survey instruments, there is an association between oral genital and genital contact However, there hasn't been a true causation. So we talk a lot about associations and causations. So there's associations, which is that they are linked. There does seem to be more, it's more commonly seen in patients that have had increased numbers of sexual partners. However, what we have not been able to do is truly find a causal link. So because you have oral sex or even genital to genital sexual relations or contact, does that mean that you are going to get the HPV? What's known in cervical cancers as well is just that not everybody, the transmission is not one-to-one. It's not like HIV, where one person that has HIV, you are, you know, there's a much higher virulence. And so actually it's been talked about 90 to 95% of patients can show seropositivity but don't have clinical evidence of disease. So just because you're HPV positive, it doesn't mean that you actually have evidence of a laryngeal or head and neck cancer.
And to comment on that, so one of the recent studies that, again, Dr. Maura Gilson has just published is very interesting, showing that for some reason, men have more difficulty clearing HPV than women. So we know that, as Dr. Howell just mentioned, a lot of patients will be detected to have HPV, but if you follow them over time, eventually you can't detect it anymore. So a lot of patients clear their HPV and don't necessarily get cancer just because they had and were infected at some point doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get cancer from it.
So and that's definitely true for the adult onset RRPs too. There's always the ages between 20 and 40 years, and they have a higher prevalence in men.
And what was shown is that if you test men over time, if men have increasing partners, they have a higher risk of having HPV detected, whereas women, if they have increasing partners, they actually have a better chance of clearing the virus, which is says something about the women's immune system compared to the men, and we don't quite understand that yet.
Are there symptoms of HPV, or does it pretty much just go undetected till you have a test for it?
It depends on what type of HPV you have. So, in
the the whole problem, there's so many different types. Okay.
There are, but in cervical, like, that's what pap smears are for, is to try to detect HPV, and sometimes you can have some dysplasia, so some abnormal cells before you detect cancer. There's not a good way in the head and neck, however.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us. And let's talk with William in Wyoming. Hi, William.
Hello, good afternoon. So, simple question, is it effective or does it make sense for a middle-aged man to get the vaccine?
That is a very good question. Right now, it's not approved for middle-aged men. So the idea is that most likely, most people have been exposed by the time that we get older. However, that may change over time. And in fact, most physicians only offer the HPV vaccine to girls, not to boys. And now that we know about the head and neck cancer risk, I'm a huge advocate for everyone being vaccinated. Only time will tell if it prevents head and neck cancer, because you have to wait several years. So usually most patients that get head and neck cancer from HPV, they've actually had it for 20, 30 years before it results in cancer. So some would argue, depending on what you mean by middle age, that if a 70-year-old were to get vaccinated, it wouldn't matter, because it's not gonna, if they've already been exposed, first of all, the vaccination's not going to do anything. If they haven't been exposed, then it takes so long to develop the cancer in the first place that there's no point of getting the vaccination.
We talked about pap smears or how you detect HPV in women. What about men? Are there tests that men can take to see if they have HPV?
So in the HIV population, anal cancer is another cancer that is known to be associated with HPV. So in the HIV population, they actually do anal pap smears. But other than that, there's no accepted test for men.
So, and a lot of that is, again, because we have no current data that exists to support the use of either a vaccine for prevention right now, or that it helps, you know, even if, as Dr. Weisdraper is talking about, it doesn't, having the vaccine later after you've already been, have had transmission of the HPV, it doesn't show that there's been any improvement in whether you get a cancer or in your treatment after you have developed one. So there's no current data to allow for that. The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention actually recommends vaccination for patients older than 11 years and up to age 27. But again, it has initially, it's been in females was and young girls was the original.
Patricia, did I understand you correctly that the vaccine could be used to prevent head and neck cancer?
That theoretically. So it only time will tell if that's proven, but because it takes so long to develop cancer once you've been exposed and the vaccine is relatively new, we've got 20, 30 years before we're going to be able to answer that question for sure.
Hmm. Rebecca, we now have these two connections between HPV and cervical cancer and HPV and head and neck cancer. Are researchers continuing to look at HPV as a possible cause for other forms of cancer?
In the head and neck, I can definitely say yes. So, for instance, some of the patients that I treat are early glottic cancers, so that's early vocal fold cancers, and they have been shown to have an HPV association, although, again, it's not nearly as strong as the oropharyngeal data, and we don't really know exactly what to do with it yet. So, again, in the head and neck, we know that there's an association. We also know that there's an association, obviously, in the cervix. And that's part of that is because of where the HPV virus itself is actually shown to cause problems. And again, it's usually in what we call the junction between the stratified squamous and respiratory columnar epithelium. So it's a change in the two types of mucosa or skin on the inside of the head and neck, which is also in some way similar to the inside or the genital tract. At this point, nothing that I know, unless Tricia does, on any other site-specific cancers.
Yeah, just anal, cervical, and head and neck. That, and as Dr. Howell just pointed out, it has to do with the transition zones in all three areas. So if you don't have a transition zone between the mucosal areas and the other epithelium, that's really where HPV thrives and where it likes to replicate and where we have the issues. There are other viruses that are associated with other types of cancers, specifically nasopharyngeal is EBV, so Epstein-Barr virus related. Hepatocellular carcinoma is going to be your HCV virus, so your hepatitis virus. So there are other viruses that are known to be associated with cancers. And there have been some researchers that have been bold and said at one point, we're going to figure out that all cancers are some kind of infection related. But that's not the case right now.
So how can head and neck cancer be prevented, though? I guess you still have to take into consideration that smoking and drinking or things like that are still risk factors.
Correct.
Despite this discovery. What are things people can do to reduce their chances of getting these types of cancer?
So that's the biggest one is stop smoking, stop drinking. Because even if you have HPV, if you smoke and you drink on top of it, you have a worse prognosis. But other than that, there are some other risk factors in other countries. They're not as common here. So there's certain types of nuts that are known to be associated. But and getting the HPV vaccine may prevent. I can't say that for sure. We hope that's going to be the case. Other than that, there's really not much else.
Mm-hmm. Well, how important is good oral hygiene, particularly for preventing forms of oral cancer?
That is a very good question. Theoretically, that is going to help, especially going to the dentist regularly to make sure if something is popping up that is detected early so that, as Dr. Howe already pointed out, just surgical resection alone will take care of it.
Mm-hmm. And Rebecca,
I think that gets into the early surveillance factor. So I don't think that there's necessarily – we don't have any good ways of preventing disease quite yet. We don't have a pap smear for head and neck cancers yet. But I do think that, you know, early surveillance, early indications. So if you have, again, which goes towards going to the dentist as well, if you have an ulcer lesion that is not your typical, doesn't go away after a week or 2 weeks, then it should be evaluated. And if it still hasn't gone away after medical management, then it should be biopsied. And so I think it's just it's more early cancers and smaller cancers always do much better. The rates of survival and the decreased amount of morbidity and mortality that are associated with early tumors compared to larger, bulkier, metastatic tumors, especially in the head and neck region, make a huge difference in patients' care.
Rebecca and Tricia, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Assistant professor in the Division of Hematology Oncology at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine, Dr. Tricia Wise-Draper, and assistant professor of otolaryngology at UC College of Medicine, Dr. Rebecca Howe. Coming up, we'll hear about Cincinnati's urban Appalachian community. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.